U.S. President Joe Biden came under fire from political leaders and human rights defenders worldwide over the weekend for failing to directly sanction or rebuke Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman over the brutal assassination of journalist Jamal Khashoggi by a Saudi government hit squad in 2018. Mohammed bin Salman is guilty of murder, wrote the editorial board of the Washington Post, where Khashoggi worked. Biden should not give him a pass, the editorial added. That heinous crime against a permanent U.S. resident and contributing columnist to the Post should not go unpunished. Under U.S. law, Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS, as he is widely known, ought to be banned from travel to the United States and subjected to an asset freeze. That President Biden has chosen not to pursue that course suggests that the fundamental change he promised in U.S.-Saudi relations will not include holding to account its reckless ruler, who consequently is unlikely to be deterred from ruler criminal behavior. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union recently, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki defended the Biden administration's decision despite the gruesome murder and the findings of the U.S. intelligence report to withhold even a wrist slap from MBS. Even in recent history, Democratic and Republican administrations, there have not been sanctions put in place for the leaders or foreign governments where we have diplomatic relations, and even where we don't have diplomatic relations, Psaki told CNN. Psaki said the administration believes there are more effective ways to make sure this doesn't happen again, and also to be able to leave room to work with the Saudis on areas where there is mutual agreement, where there is national interest for the United States. But critics say this is a grave mistake, and that some form of accountability or sanctions should be aimed directly at Mohammed bin Salman. With the release of the U.S. report confirming Saudi officials' culpability at the highest levels, the United States should now take the lead in ensuring accountability for this crime and for setting in place the international mechanisms to prevent and punish such acts in the future. Agnes Callamard, the UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Execution, said recently. Specifically, Callamard called on the Biden administration to impose sanctions against the Crown Prince, as it has done for the other perpetrators, targeting his personal assets, but also his international engagements. David Hurst, co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Middle East Eye, warned in a column recently that Biden is sending a nothing less than chilling message to the Saudis and the world by taking a hands-off approach to the Crown Prince. This will embolden the murderous prince more than anything his friends in Trump or Pompeo could have done, wrote Hurst. It means he can get away with doing the same thing again and again. The United States should stand consistently for human rights and human dignity around the world, not just when it's convenient. Representative Ilhan Omar said, "The Saudi prince will not, in no doubt, vary his means of conducting his terror campaign against anyone who speaks out against him, but whatever he does, he now knows he cannot be punished because America, even under an administration that is hostile to him, will just not allow it." Democrats in Congress also expressed frustration as they called for true accountability. "What was already apparent is now unmistakable," said Representative Ilhan Omar. "MBS and the Saudi regime are directly responsible for the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi and must be held accountable." Obama said she intends to introduce a bill in the coming days to place sanctions on MBS, both for Khashoggi murder as well as other well-documented human rights abuses. The United States, said Omar, should stand consistently for human rights and human dignity around the world, not just when it's convenient. Representative Andy Kim, a member of the House Foreign Relations Committee, tweeted, "The lack of action against the Crown Prince sends a clear message across the globe that those at the top can escape consequences." Following release of U.S. report, the Committee to Protect Journalists called for a strong response from the White House and other global leaders. The U.S. and its allies, said CPJ senior West Asia-North Africa region researcher Justin Shillard, should sanction the Crown Prince and other royal court members to show the world that there are tangible consequences for assassinating journalists, no matter who you are. Meanwhile, the Society for Professional Journalists said it was outraged that those chiefly responsible for Khashoggi's murder have been insulted from accountability, even as it welcomed promises from the Biden administration that a range of actions remain on the table. "We hope," said Matthew T. Hall, SPJ national president, "the president chooses one quickly and decisively to send a message to Saudi Arabian leaders and people everywhere that the killing of a journalist is unacceptable anywhere on this planet."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, he was born in Qadhimiyya, and then later they were moved to Najaf, and he studied in Najaf. And according to the teachers that we have heard from our teachers or the resources that we had, they have said like he became mujtahid at the age of 16 and he had the ijaza from Ayatollah Khoi.
When we look at his scientific activities, his scholarly books, we see that all of his ideas come from a very established foundation. And that systematic, planned, programmed system can also be observed and manifested in his political and social activities.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the teacher, and I'm Ata, the host of this program. The teacher is mainly concerned with the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim thinkers, jurists, and philosophers all across the nation of Islam. With me in the studio are two dear experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Dr. Murtazizadeh and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Dr. Murtazizadeh, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Good to be here.
So, we have started a new series on one of the most outstanding philosophers, thinkers, and jurists of contemporary Iraq. He was really a great Shia scholar. We missed him at the age of 46. He was assassinated and martyred by the Basra regime of Saddam in Iraq. He's no one but Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. Really a mastermind and really a genius regarding Islamic fiqh, usul, philosophy, epistemology, and Islamic economics. Okay, regarding Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Dr. Rezazadeh, one of the most outstanding books that he authored is the book Iqtisaduna, Our Economics. This was really a great book regarding Islamic economics. It has been translated into English, and it is one of the magnum opus of Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. What is outstanding about this book regarding Islamic economics is the model that was introduced, and according to Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr himself, what is introduced throughout this book is the a kind of maktab, a school of thought regarding Islamic economics, not the economic science in terms of what we know in today's world. We can say with all these statistics and the numbers and the digits. First of all, Said Mohsen Naqvi explained this for us. Why Shahid Baghdad Assad considered it as a maktab and not a science, economics, I mean?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, iqtisaduna, our economics, is consisted of two volumes. And in volume one, there are two parts. In the second part, you can find a title as Economy as a Whole or Islamic Economy as a Whole. There's a chapter in it. Basically, in the first volume, when he's talking about the materialism, like the Marxism or the communism and capitalism, after that, it comes to the Islamic economy. And there he's trying to explain the idea that you just mentioned, like as a maktab, why he's saying that. Mm-hmm. He argues there, he says, actually, we cannot say that the Islamic economy is something separate from Islam. From the religion of Islam.
That's right.
And it is the same idea as, you know, we say like the politics is within Islam, economy is within Islam, the social sciences is within Islam. Everything is the part of Islam.
That's right.
There is nothing separate. And that's what he's basically trying to explain over here.
That's right.
He's saying when we talk about, when we say that there is an Islamic economy, it does not mean that it is a sciences that you will go and learn about it. Mm-hmm. It means that you need to live according to the rulings of Islam.
That's right.
And there, when you're following the rulings of Islam, you're living a life in which you have the Islamic economy.
Okay.
So this economy is not separate. And then he says, like, there are three main things on this. The very first thing is the belief that in Islam, because we believe in God, that's and right. everything has been sent by God, and there is a religion that we believe, the Prophet and all those. So we have to have this belief.
That's right.
Second thing is the concepts of Islam. You need to live according to the rulings of Islam, the concepts of Islam.
Very good.
No matter these rulings are in regards to what, you have to live. For example, if Islam says you need to be just, you have to be just in all aspects of your life.
That's right. Okay? Very good.
If Islam says you should not, for example, steal anything from anyone, it is in all aspects.
Okay.
Okay. So these are the ideas, the concepts.
So the first
thing is belief. The second thing is concept. The third thing is sentiment. You need to have sentiment towards what you're doing. So when you do this, you can apply this in politics. You can apply this on your prayers. And even he says, you can apply this in Islamic economy. Because in Islamic economy, if you want to have an Islamic economy, you must believe in Allah.
That's right.
You must follow the concepts of Islam. Okay. Because you're following the concepts of Islam, you're being just.
Okay.
You're not doing, you're not oppressing anyone. That's why when you practice economy, when you're doing like your dealings, it becomes Islamic. That's why he says this is a maktab.
That's right.
It's not a science that you will learn separately.
So can we say that Islamic economics, ilm al iqtisad, is part of the economy that Shahid Saad is introducing in his book?
It is, I mean, part economy of Islam
as a whole.
That, as a whole.
Okay.
It's a part of Islam because, you know, when we talk about the economy, it's you invest or you buy or you sell or you give loans.
Transactions
that you're doing for the country, obviously, it's different for the country. So he says it's as a whole in Islam. You need to look at Islam as a whole. You cannot separate this thing as a science from Islam.
Okay, thank you much. Dr. Reza Zadeh, the Hausa is famous for teaching Rasail and Makasib, okay? Which are the famous books.
Fiqh and Usul,
Yeah, Makasib, okay? Which are somehow related to, these were, both of them were authored by Sheikh Al-Ansari, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
Rasail and Makasib, isn't it?
Yes. Rasail is Usul, Makasib is
Makasib is, Fiqh. But in Makasib, which is Kasb, very much we are close to
financial transactions.
But I think that Iqtisaduna was somehow, we can say, a new look at the economy in whole and Islamic economics, with the differentiation that Shahid Saad made between economics as a science and economics as a maktab or a school of thought.
Yes.
What's your take on that, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, Shahid Saad himself, in the introduction of the first version of the book, he clearly said that, you know, his idea or his goal for writing that book was to do an in-depth study of the Islamic economy, and also expressing it or presenting it in a systematic way. With a systematic model.
Okay.
And also he wanted to show the foundations and thoughts of the fundamental thoughts of the Islamic economy and clarify the differences of Islamic economy and other economic schools, and also the relationship of Islamic economy with the other parts of Islamic thought. So he wanted to do all of these things, and the result is this wonderful, amazing book that we see after about 50 years that has passed from authoring of that book. It's still the most important book that has already been authored about Islamic economy.
Okay.
And the Iqtisadana by Shahid Sadr, because of its comprehensiveness and its deep ideas that he's posing, is still very popular and is being taught in many very prominent universities around the world, including Islamic world, not only the Shia seminaries, but also the Sunni. For example, it is taught in Al-Azhar and in other parts of the world.
Good.
But for us to have a better understanding of the book, it's also good to have a look at the different chapters or the structure of the book. For example, he talks about, first he starts with an introduction and critique of Marxism. He also talks about introduction and also critique of capitalism. So he explains these, and this shows that he was aware of the let's say trending economic schools, and then after that he starts talking about the main branches of Islamic economy.
That's right.
And also the process of acquiring or understanding the Islamic economy.
This
process is very well explained in that book.
Okay.
And he brings up with an idea of that he called nazariye tawzi' pish az tawlid.
That's right.
The idea of distribution
before
production.
Production, that's right.
And the other idea, which is the idea of distribution after production.
Okay.
He explains this. And also the production idea,
that's right.
The theory of production.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he talks about responsibility of the Islamic state in Islamic economy.
That's right.
What should the state do about Islamic economy if they want to really follow the Islamics?
That's right.
So this was a very brief overview of the book. And as you mentioned, and it was mentioned by Sayyid too, we come to see two different important concepts which are compared with each other. He says one thing that we have is the science of economy.
That's right.
And he separates the science of economy and economic school, especially according to his idea.
Yes.
And he says that the science of economy is after finding the relationship between the economic phenomena in the society and also the relationship between economic factors and phenomena. While
the maktab.
Yes, maktab or
school.
Economic school gives a method, a just method, a method that is based on justice in order to set up a prosperous economic life for the people.
For the people.
So it's more talking about the methods. It's not about finding the, you know, objective reality.
That's
that
right.
is up to the science of science of economy.
Yes.
And he says economic school of Islam is different.
That's right.
It's more about the method, and as I said, it's what it wants to give us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Reza Zadeh.
You're welcome.
Said Mohsen Nawi, what seems interesting to me about Iqtisadana by Shahid Muhammad Baghir Assad and this look that he had at the Islamic economics is that it gives the people and the Muslims a kind of specific lifestyle. I mean, this is very important. I mean, capitalism and communism in their own countries, they have affected the system of the living, the daily lives of the people with their banking system, with their economic system, the transactions, I mean, trading here and there, stock markets. But what seems it was in the mind of Shahid Muhammad Baghir Assad was giving the people a kind of new look at their lives and applying the Islamic rulings in the life to introduce them a pure Islamic lifestyle through Islamic economics. We can find ethics or akhlaq in that. We could find social justice or edalat ijtimai in that. And these are the beautiful concepts that the people in the 21st and 21st century are looking after. It seems nice, a nice model for the people to follow, isn't it?
Well, we should not forget that Shahid Sadr was a jurist. Mm-hmm. And it is the duty of jurists to mm-hmm. apply the Islamic rules in the society.
Very good.
To make people follow the Islamic rulings. It is the duty of jurists. And what I can see in the, what we see in his works, even if we look at the our philosophy, his book, or the our economy, the book that he has wrote, Ikhlasaduna, he tries to explain people that if you follow Islam truly, you will have an Islamic economic system. You do not need to bring a system from outside. Mm-hmm. It's already there. Mm-hmm. It's already been set. And everything is linked to each other. For example, you know the main difference. Yes. We are talking about his idea about the Islamic economy being the maktab and not a sciences. Why it is maktab? It is because it is linked to all the Islamic rulings that we have.
That's right.
All the Islamic sciences. For example, you know, if I want to define prophet according to the conventional definition that we have, non-Islamic definition mm-hmm. that we have, and in that definition, if I have, for example, if I tell you, like, I have given, for example, $100 charity out of 1,000, mm-hmm. what would be my profit? You will say $900.
Okay.
Because you're minimizing the charity that I have given. Uh-huh. It's not under the profit. It's okay. Something I lost. Mm-hmm. I did it for the sake of mankind or humanity.
Okay.
Whereas in Islam, this $100 is converted to $1,000, for example, dollars in hereafter. Mm-hmm. So in Islamic concepts, they do not count it as a loss. Mm-hmm. It is counted as a profit.
As an investment.
As an investment.
Yeah.
Yes, it is an investment. It is okay. A profit for you. It's yeah. A win-win situation for yes. You in the Islamic sciences. Mm-hmm. So when you come to the Islamic sciences, when you okay. link ethics with the economy, when you link political sciences with the economy, mm-hmm. when you link the social sciences with the economy, yeah. These all together becomes the Islamic system.
They will get to the justice.
System. Yes.
They will get to justice. Ethics is observed over there. Okay, so what a very beautiful
said,
picture.
And what Shahid said is wanted to basically tell is, look, Islam as a whole is a political system. Mm-hmm. Islam as a whole is an economic system. If you follow the economic system mm-hmm. of Islam, it means that you're following the Islam. So the best way is to follow Islam.
That's right.
And you're following everything. And that's why, you know, in his book, when he came, he came and he argued about the Marxism, about yes. the communism first, and then he criticized the capitalism,
yes.
especially that's happening. And then after that, he started to develop mm-hmm. the ideas about the Islamic economic system.
Yes.
So this is the main thing
He was also concerned about the natural resources and the yes. distribution of these natural resources among the people, you know, based on justice. This is very important. This is what Dr. Azad also talked about the Tozi or the distribution. You know, this distribution system has also been tackled by Shahid Sadr, and also in the last two chapters of his book, he talks about the role that the states and the governments have in
have
these.
The role.
Yeah,
yes. That's true. Say, because in the West, yes. in the capital system, we see everything is for the investors.
That's right.
The old yeah. profit, everything is for the investors, and that's why we can see, like in the West, for example, 99% of people, like, they're protesting against one person.
Yes.
The Wall Street protest that we had. Mm. So, but in the yes. Islamic economic yes. system, we can see, like, everything should be distributed on yes. the equality basis.
Equality, yes.
And that's
not amassing the wealth.
No.
Okay.
No, obviously, okay. everyone has the right to live. Everyone right. has a right. Obviously, everyone needs protection. Mm-hmm. Everyone should have the best economy.
Okay.
And that's what Islam is talking about. Yes. Obviously, you know, Islam came to free the slaves.
Yes.
It voided the system of slavery.
That's right.
When the Prophet came. Islam came to help poor people. Like, we have homes, we have zakah, these yes. charities that we yes. have. On top of that, we have mustahab charities.
Yes.
The favorable charities, yes. we can say. All these things tells us that Islam is talking about a system in which we have justice.
That's all right.
And in order to follow that just system, you need to follow Islamic rulings.
And the money and the wealth and the possessions, the farms, the land, the natural resources are like the trust in our hands. Yeah. So we have to observe justice to that. And what a beautiful world will be achieved if what Shahid Sadr said in his book is to be followed. Thank you very much, Said Mohsen Naghvi and Dr. Rezazadeh, for a nice elaboration regarding the book Ikhtisaduna. And also Islamic economics as a maktab, a school of thought, and not a science. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. Please visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam Radio, also our YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us start the day with a short and sweet saying from Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Say good wording and it will be your distinctive feature. Do good deeds and you will be reckoned with its people.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the light. Sophisticated scanning technology is revealing new secrets about Littlefoot. That's a well-preserved fossil of an early human forerunner dating back to nearly 3.7 million years ago.
Now, the importance of it is not only that it is the only complete skull of an Australopithecus from anywhere, but it is the only one with a complete skeleton as well. Furthermore, it is the oldest Australopithecus in southern Africa, dating to 3.67 million years ago. So it tells us a lot about our early ancestry. Now, we're not saying that Littlefoot represents a direct ancestor to modern humans, but certainly a relative, certainly a very close relative of our ancestors.
The fossil was found in South Africa in the 1990s. It's now being studied at a particle accelerator facility in Oxfordshire, Britain. The facility allows scientists to produce X-ray images of the fossil with extreme detail. They say the result has been fascinating.
The bone microstructure looks amazing because we can really see the different tissues, the proportions, the thickness, and also the size of the different canals. So all of this make Littlefoot more like a living person.
So far, scientists have found that Littlefoot stood on her feet. They know she had gorilla-like features such as powerful hands, which enable her to climb trees. But she also had different traits compared to the human species believed to have first appeared 300,000 years ago. A Nigerian artist has become famous for his skills in creating art from coconut shells. Nathaniel Hodonu uses the shells to make stunning artworks in different forms, including portraits and sculptures, as well as home accessories. He collects shells from local oil factories, which throw them away as waste. He began his work in 2006 after his art teacher gave him two coconuts as a present. Hodonu now teaches art lovers creative ways to transform waste coconut shells into beautiful handicrafts.
tourism in Oman took a nosedive during the COVID-19 pandemic, sadly, much like many places in the world. But one village managed to turn its fortunes around by transforming some ancient homes into hotels and touristic attractions. Nestled in the high mountains of Oman, the village of Misfat al-Ibrahim offers some of the most beautiful and serene natural areas for trail running and rock climbing. Now, the village has repurposed ancient mud brick homes into boutique hotels. The beige-colored homes with walls of handmade mud brick are elegant and simple, and the interior spaces are furnished with traditional wood and textiles.
Misfat al-Ibrahim attracts many tourists, so people and project owners in the village have planned on expanding touristic projects. You'll find heritage hotels, popular cafes and restaurants. We as a company decided to provide various adventure-related activities too.
The centuries-old homes were renovated for safety and comfort to combine old Omani life with modern amenities. The village is near what is called Oman's Grand Canyon and has somewhere around 800 residents. Many tourists have visited the area because of the heritage hotels and environmental components in the ancient village. These inns have attracted many tourists to the area despite the COVID-19 pandemic. Almost everyone has seen snowmen, but how many people have encountered a snow snake in their lifetime? A family in the US has awed their neighborhood with a fascinating ice sculpture of a serpent. The household in Colorado spent 10 hours making the impressive artwork in their front yard. They first created the shape of the animal and then sprayed paint on it to bring it to life. The sculpture measures 23 meters in length. It has attracted many neighbors and passers-by who occasionally take pictures with it. This is not the first time the family made headlines with their ice work. In 2019, they caught people's eyes with an ice sculpture of a tiger. A giant ice disc with an even greater message. Here, people in Finland have carved a humongous carousel in Lake Lahjärvi to raise awareness about global warming. An inventor and a team of helpers spent days in sub-zero temperatures to create what they say is the world's largest ice carousel. The rotating machine is over 300 meters wide and is spun by motorboats. The makers also carved another smaller disc in the ice next to it. The two carousels were commissioned by local authorities who want to bring attention to climate change and shortening winters in Finland. An iceberg the size of Greater London breaks off in Antarctica years after the first cracks appeared. The iceberg detached from the Brunt ice shelf near a British research station and is expected to either move away or run aground not far from the ice shelf. Scientists were expecting the calving of the iceberg to happen after monitoring the area with GPS instruments and satellite imagery on a daily basis. They discovered the first cracks almost 10 years ago, but they are skeptical about the role of climate change in this case.
A unique remnant of bygone days. Archaeologists have found a rare ancient Roman ceremonial carriage outside Pompeii. The carriage was unearthed near the stables of a village just outside the very city. It has four wheels and is made of iron, bronze, and tin. The vehicle is the first of its kind discovered in the area. Italy's culture minister has called it a unique find without any precedent in the country. Pompeii was buried under ash and a volcanic eruption in 79 AD. So far, about two-thirds of the ancient city has been uncovered, I should say. The lights, merriment, and traditional food. That's what China's Lantern Festival has brought to millions of people across the country.
Loneliness can hit anyone at any time, but it becomes severe during the pandemic-like scenario the world is going through. But some Japanese are enjoying the companionship of robots to overcome loneliness as they are unable to meet their loved ones during the coronavirus. The cute singing snowman is called Charlie. He is one among a large number of new generation clever robots being produced in Japan. Manufacturers are making a wide variety of affordable androids as well as robotic pets, and they say their sales are booming. They also say their products have found favor with customers of all ages, not just kids. Studies have shown that therapeutic pets can bring comfort to dementia patients.
Spring is coming and blossoming flowers are once again creating stunning sceneries across China.
clouds of cherry blossoms have created breathtaking views in Wuhan, a city known for being the birthplace of COVID-19. Inside the city, the main university is one of the best places to enjoy those blossoms, being well known for that among the Chinese. Students are thrilled to enjoy the floral scenery after missing it last year.
As the pandemic has been well brought under control in China so far this year, residents in Wuhan City, as well as students, workers and teachers of the university all come for the flowers and this warm spring.
In other cities, it is the plum flower that attracts a large number of visitors. They say the white-colored blossoms on mountains seem as if it had been snowing. Many of the tourists choose to stay in resorts that offer picturesque views of flowers. Many say they wait for a year so that they can draw a picture of the blossoms.
Police across the globe are using new methods to prevent crime and improve their performance. Now Pakistani police have come up with an idea to put officers on rollerblades to catch criminals in the commercial hub Karachi. The new armed rollerblading unit is going through rigorous training for over a month with the aim of curbing theft and harassment on the streets. During the training, they were seen carefully balancing on skates while leaping over staircases or lifting their guns. The unit, made up of 10 men and 10 women, would be sent to public places. The chief of the unit says rollerblades make chasing thieves on motorcycles through the city of 20 million much easier.
We felt we needed to come up with some innovative approach to control street crime in Karachi. We analyzed and saw that there are certain spots where crime incidents, say for example mobile snatching, are more frequent. We also saw that criminals use motorcycles that help them run away easily. At times, it is difficult for police teams to chase them from our vehicles.
The unit chief also says that officers would only carry handguns, while in some locations, such as shopping malls, they will not be armed at all. Officers say they can now reach narrow alleys very quickly, where it's usually difficult to go. The rollerblading police are expected to be deployed officially next month.
The coronavirus and related restrictions have forced many businesses to either close or struggle. But some people have found ways to save their jobs and help others to survive the crisis. A top German chef is the one. Peter Frusamer now prepares dishes at a hospital canteen outside Berlin. Frusamer says before accepting the job, he was the head chef at his wife's restaurant. But it was closed due to the pandemic, and he chose to be a hospital cook rather than a jobless man. This German chef says he is happy to find some distraction while working in a hospital kitchen, besides making a contribution to patients' recovery.
I find it frustrating to be here and see the empty tables and the empty restaurant. When I'm at the hospital, I don't notice any of this. For me, the coronavirus crisis doesn't exist at the hospital. Sure, corona is always a topic, but there, I'm at work and I'm busy. But when I come here, I notice what a cut is going through society. That's why I'm happy to have my hospital and to find some distraction. Here in the restaurant, I could actually sit down and start crying.
The hospital staff also seem happy with Frusamer's presence. They say since the arrival of the new chef, they come to eat in the canteen regularly and discover new dishes not eaten before. Frusamer believes the reason health workers and patients love his dishes is that he gives his heart and soul to the food. That's a wrap up. Thank you so much for being with us, and bye-bye.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear brothers and sisters, In Faith and Humanity, Salamun Alaikum, and so welcome to this program entitled Today's Special. Today we're going to speak about loving the world in Islam.
Ya Allah, Ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an, fi ma sa'ina. Ya Allah, Ya Mannan, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an, fi ma sa'ina. Grateful today for difference and change, for all colors and shades, 'cause you made it this way. وهبتنا النبراس بحب كل الناس أغبط لنا إحساس أنت هادينا.
Today, Wednesday, is the 19th of the month of Rajab, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 13th of Isfan, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 3rd of March, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is Chapter Taha, verse 100 to 103. We'll listen to it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم من أعرض عنه فإنه يحمل يوم القيامة وزرا.
Whoever turns away from it, then indeed he will bear on the day of resurrection a burden.
خالدين فيه وساء لهم يوم القيامة حملا.
Abiding eternally therein, and evil it is for them on the day of resurrection as a load.
يوم ينفخ في الصور ونحشر المجرمين يومئذ زرقا.
The day the horn will be blown, and we will gather the criminals that day, blue-eyed.
يَتَخَافَتُونَ بَيْنَهُمْ إِلَّا بِثْتُمْ إِلَّا عَشْرًا.
They will murmur among themselves, you remained not but 10 days in the world.
لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
مَا لَنَا رَبٌ سِوَى.
Dear brothers and sisters, the sinners shall whisper with each other about the length of their stop in the intermediate world. Some of them say that they had tarried there for only 10 days, and they do not know how long it had been. This state of their speaking in low voice may be for the great horror that they feel in themselves because of seeing the scenery of the hereafter, or because of the intense of weakness and feebleness in them. We're speaking about the reality of the world. Man is the child of this physical world, nature being his mother, and he the offspring of water and dust. The love for this world is implanted in his heart since the early time of his development and growth. As he grows, this love increases. One account of the faculties of desires and the organs of deriving pleasure that have been granted to him by God for the sake of the preservation of individuals and species, this love grows day by day. But if our hearts become aware of the fact that this world is the lowest of the worlds and the house of decline and change and the realm of imperfection and destruction, and that there are other realms beyond death, each of which is eternal, perfect, permanent, where life is bliss, our hearts would naturally acquire the love of that world and would abhor this world. Dr. Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi-nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with seeking worldly pleasures and seeking this world for the sake of this world, for itself, as viewed in Islam. Based on the Quranic instructions, we understand that we find that this world is like a very fastly passing afternoon. In the Surah Al-Asr, we find that it's indicated that in this transitory life, I mean, the life in this world, we find that the life in this world is analogized to a very passing afternoon. And afternoon usually comes, certainly after afternoon, we find dusk, evening, darkness. Now we find that those people who are cognizant, who are blessed enough to understand, to appreciate, to seize the opportunity, they will make the most of this transitory short time span, that is, this afternoon. However, those people who are very much and easily deceived by this worldly life, they will be the losers. In this regard, we find that in the Surah Ghafir, verse 39, it's indicated, يا قوم إنما هذه الحياة الدنيا متاع وإن الآخرة هي دار القرار. Oh people, إنما هذه الحياة الدنيا. Certainly, life in this world is just a tool, just an object. I mean, quite a worthless object. وإن الآخرة هي دار القرار. However, the afterlife, the world after this, the world after this world is the world of residence. We find that in the world hereafter, the people not only will receive the effects of and the influence and effects of whatever they had done in this world, rather the fate in the world hereafter will hardly be changed.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the
The world and worldliness, the relation between man and the world. Dear friend, in the view of Islam, neither has the world been created without a purpose, nor has man stayed into it aimlessly. There have been and are some schools of thought which view the world with pessimism. In this view, the existing order of the universe is far from being perfect. There have existed other schools which considered man's entry into the world of existence to be the result of such cosmic error, as if man has strayed into it. From the viewpoint of Islam, the relations of man to the world is not that of the prisoners with his prison. Rather, it is the kind of relation that exists between a peasant and his farm, or a merchant and
the marketplace. The world is a school for man, his training ground and a place where he can acquire perfection.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها شفاعة أنا لها.
Now, how to control our love for this dunya, this world, compelling too much love of dunya as adults. As adults, we still fall for the same traps we did as children. Similarly, the cure for this disease of too much love of the dunya is the same. When we want to the latest and the greatest toy and become obsessed with it and feel like we can't live without it, we can look to those who have less than us. Allah's Messenger said, look at those who stand at a lower financial level than you, but don't look at those who stand at a higher level than you, for this would make the favor conferred upon you by Allah insignificant in your eyes. So, when we feel the urge to compete with each other in material wealth or possessions, things that will not help you even a little in the hereafter, replace that competition with the competition in good deeds and gaining religious knowledge, things that will build mansions and gardens for us in the hereafter.
Now, what even complicates things in our digital era, the era of social media, is that we're constantly coming up with new things to attach to. It's not only now that you're attached to objects. It's not only that. You're now attached to your accounts, to your posts, to your Facebook profile, to the profile picture that you put, right? How many times do you go through your photos searching for that right photo to put on your profile? And then you look at it, you adjust it, you use all these crazy apps to give you that better image, that better tone, that better color, that better shading. And you keep looking at it 10, 20, 30, 50 times a day. I know some people, they look at their profile picture 100 times a day. Because we're attached to our own images, to our own face. And then you have this whole world of selfie obsessions. Allahu Akbar. Let's not get started with that. We're attached. It's normal. It's natural. Because we human beings, we love ourselves and everything that has to do with us. So we're constantly trying to project ourselves. And a lot of times we're trying to get attention. Now this is normal, natural human behavior. This doesn't mean you're a bad person if you experience this. But this means that this is part of your struggle. You need to work on this. You need to do something about this. So we find that sometimes this attachment becomes excessive with our gadgets, with the tools that we have. How many families, my dear brothers and sisters, suffer, especially marital relationships, when one of the spouses or both of them are extremely addicted to their gadgets, to their phones? How many families have been broken up because of that?
I was so far from you, yet to me you were always so close. I wandered lost in the dark. I closed my eyes to all the signs you put in my way. I walked every day further.
Dear friends, dear believers, we hope you've made the most use of today's program. Please send your comments and suggestions at parstoday.com/yen. Please do keep us in your prayer. في أمان الله.
الحمد لله.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up,